Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Alpha Talks Editors Roundtable, What Moved the Markets This Week. The week concluding Friday, January 29, 2021. A week which will live in infamy, perhaps. A week that I am calling, or actually this show I'm calling it, GameStop and the Damage Done. As we saw the face-off here between the unwashed masses from Reddit and the elite traders of Wall Street in the form of hedge funds. At least that's the narrative as it's been postulated on the mainstream media, mainstream financial media. How much truth there is to that may be something that we get into a little bit later, but there are some questions here, some discussion topics that I have told the panel to prepare. And these are in order. First of all, the main takeaways from this brouhaha. Number two, the anticipated fallout. And thirdly, who they anticipate will be the winners and losers from this whole thing. With that, let me introduce the panel. I am joined by my Seeking Alpha colleagues, Brad Olison, the VP of News, Kim Kahn, Senior News Editor, and Stephen Alfer, Managing Editor of Breaking News. I am your moderator, Nathaniel Baker, Senior Editor of Strategic Contributors here at Seeking Alpha. All right, so obviously a lot to get in for us. Let's start over with Kim. Your main takeaways from this GME fracas.
Well, my main takeaway, I think, is just how fast this happened and from such humble beginnings that it started. Basically, it started with people enthusiastic that a few guys who were involved with Chewy.com were getting into GameStop on the board level and thought it was a good reason to buy into the stock. That, you know, the stock popped after that, and then it had huge short interest, so there was a bit of a short squeeze. Citron came out and made their case for it going back down to $20, and that just kind of lit off a powder keg with the Wall Street Bets board, took it as a personal challenge and started going all in, coordinating their buys. And then we got a gamma squeeze, which is what happens when you've got deep out of the money calls being bought, and those people writing those calls have to buy the stock, the underlying stock, to hedge. So that had a snowball effect. And then all of a sudden now we've got GameStop up at $300. And, you know, this pace of it, compared to, like, say, like, you know, things that are altering the fabric of Wall Street, like the financial crisis, it's lightning speed. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and one of the things that it impacted the market was just saying again about this, you know, people who still want to be concerned about valuation and whether stocks are fairly valued, just getting another punch in the nose. You know, they've already, you know, the market's already been saying, yeah, Tesla could be worth every other automaker. Fine, that's okay. And now it seems all of a sudden, no, but GameStop can't be worth $10 billion. That's just way too much and way too fast. So we're actually seeing, like, you know, a lot of push and pull. But I mean, the value players, again, just, have to face another market incident that says, well, your philosophy is a bit outdated.
Yeah, and thank you, by the way, for defining what a gamma hedge is, or a gamma, what do they call it? A gamma trap, which, yeah, I was not entirely fully, completely aware of. And yeah, GameStop, as we record this around 11 a.m. on Friday morning, soaring today up to north of $320 a share. Of course, that could very quickly correct itself, as it has in recent days. The other interesting thing, of course, is that potentially everybody who is short has closed their position as of yesterday when the trading was interrupted in this and other shares. Anyway, let's move on here. Brad Olison, what is your main take here?
Well, that was a great segue. I think the biggest takeaway this week was the potential mass disenfranchisement of a major swath of the retail market. I think with the restriction of trading, like you just mentioned, particularly on the upside, you know, basically locking in the ability to only sell and not buy. I think, you know, you can you felt it. I think probably everyone has a family member or two who may have had a Robinhood account, and they were, you know, pinging people saying, hey, what do I do? How do I get out of this? Potentially, there was even a survey that was done by a platform just yesterday trying to determine how willing people were to get out of maybe Robinhood or any other brokerage that they feel like they were unfairly limited in their ability to participate in the markets. But I think that's part of this issue is, where do we go from here? How do we level the playing field so that people feel like they have an equal shot? There's a lot of political overtones to this. You are seeing a lot of politicians weigh in, whether they're just taking advantage of opportunity or whether they are truly interested in leveling the playing field. As you saw, there were, yes, a lot of people closed out their shorts because they were allowed to through other mechanisms. You know, there were, they have released, there are all these over-the-counter agreements that hedge funds have with prime brokers. They were allowed to get out of the position. And I was going to say, you know, as I led this, led off with my initial comment, there was this mass disenfranchisement. But as you just said, shares are soaring again. So I guess people are not necessarily that swayed by the risks that are out there. The biggest thing that I saw this week in terms of this was how a broker actually responded to this. And it was almost, I don't want to call it a nanny state, but there were elements of what the brokers did that said, we're scared about the market, and so we are going to shut this down. They're allowed to do that. They have market volatility clauses in their terms and conditions. So we can't complain or cry foul when that happens. But there were very real concerns about how they were going to match the buyers and sellers. We obviously talk about the speculation of the upside, but for every buyer, there's a seller and vice versa. And the chairman of Interactive Brokers was on television yesterday talking about how there was, just in GameStop alone, there was close to $10 or $15 billion that needs to be settled out. And there's a very real risk that if they can't collect that from their end customer, then these brokerages are going to be left holding the bag. And so we all know that there are a lot of conspiracy theories out there about why all these brokers chose to do this at one time. Not going to further those here, but
we can.
There is a market mechanism at play that is highly complex. It's just very, very poor timing overall.
Yeah, Brad Olson with the somewhat more sober but still downcast look at this, a lot more sanguine than one Davey Day Trader was on the Tucker Carlson show last night. I don't know if you guys caught that. Pretty interesting and entertaining. All right, Stephen, let's get to you. Main takeaways.
I'm accused of being cynical, a cynic. This is one of those weeks that proves I'm not nearly cynical enough. I know we don't want to get political. I think you can draw an absolutely straight line from the kind of silencing and banning of voices, any voice that kind of goes against the establishment opinion on Twitter and other platforms, Facebook, you know, Amazon, Apple, to this. And, you know, nothing is free. If something's free, then you're the product, right?
Yeah, I like that.
And it's a really ugly situation. It stinks. And the only question going forward is if that straight line continues to where, you know, we're basically, our lives are basically run by four or five monopolistic platforms, or if something steps in to kind of break that line.
Mm. Yeah, although it's not quite a straight line in terms of the divide, there are some kind of unusual bedfellows being made here where you have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I believe that's her name, you know, coming down on the same side as Ted Cruz on some of this, at least when it comes
to... Yeah, you know, that's distasteful too. I mean, you know, are the folks calling for like government action to fix it? I mean, the government action is where we are. And, you know, right. the same group of people to call the SEC to fix this, forget about it. Hmm. Laura Unger is a former SEC commissioner. I don't know if she ran the SEC, but she was a commissioner. You know, last night she was in some video comparing what happened here with these folks making money in GameStop to the January 6th rioters.
Right.
I mean, really? So, you know, I'm not sure what the solution is, and I'm pretty sure AOC or Ted Cruz or the SEC isn't it though.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that whatever the solution is, the big financial players, to go back to your point from last week, Stephen, from China, that quote from Chinatown, they are the police. They own the police.
They own the police.
These big financial players will ultimately not be hurt. If you don't believe me, just look at the 2008 crisis. and how all of those guys came out of it.
Well, it's definitely going to create an opportunity for some of the bigger players to potentially get bigger as these things tend to happen. Mm. You know, some of the smaller players who don't have the capital to withstand this high volatility are going to get squeezed. We already kind of saw that with Robinhood drawing on its credit lines. They call it on a proactive basis. So maybe that puts them in a little more trouble and a larger broker can come in and help out, you know, quote, help out in terms of trying to swallow them and maybe create stronger capital standards for this to continue.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Jamie Dimon is watching this somewhere. JP Morgan does not have any retail brokerage, really. JP Morgan Chase. Right. And so, you know, he's looking.
Not yet.
Potentially. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And speaking of the big banks, we had, you know, James Gorman, who's the CEO of Morgan Stanley, also some real distasteful comments about how this was going to end badly. Well, of course it's going to end badly. Every kind of price bubble ends badly. I mean, Tesla collapsed 50% earlier this year before rising another 10 times. So yeah, people got burned in it. Mm. But let's not forget Morgan Stanley, you know, wouldn't be here if they weren't bailed out in 2008, 2009.
Yeah.
And Morgan Stanley had, you know, just a gangbuster 2020, thanks to, you know, 0% interest rates and Morgan Stanley being able to underwrite the subsequent, you know, rise in the stock market.
I think the bubble there is an interesting point there, right? The prices have gone so far so fast. I thought the other questionable element of what we saw being parroted across the punditry this week was, you know, and maybe these were slips. Some of these individuals didn't mean to say it, but when they said that their prices weren't real or these prices were what the stock should be, and now they're not what they quote unquote should be, where we get into a weird area where why, you know, how are these individuals who happen to get on different programs, the arbiters of what a true price is. Yeah. And many of these voices are the same voices who talk about how there should be no constraints on the free market and how, and this kind of flies in the face of that. I feel like it's just, everyone's kind of jumbled up on themselves in a lot of these different issues.
Mm-hmm. Having brokers come up and say, well, this is a fair price for GameStop, and that's where it should be, and that's why we're making these moves, because, you know, we're saving people for themselves. Well, you know, the price is where the price is, and right. You know, nobody's saying to, you know, well, you know, this is a fair value for Tesla, look at the, you know price to sales ratio, and, you know, we're gonna kind of limit your trading on that. That's right. Never gonna happen.
Maybe it could. I mean, who would have thought we could have happened what happened this week could happen? I mean, you know,
you could argue that Tesla was the testing ground for some of this. Tesla was the largest shorted name for years on the street, with, you know, just an exorbitant amount of short interest in terms of on a nominal basis, billions and billions short. And you could argue that much of some of the rally, you could see the short interest has fallen over time over the past few months as the shares have just gone to the moon, and to use some of the Wall Street better speak. You know, that you could argue that this was a testing ground for this very concept.
Sure.
And now Elon Musk's become the champion against shorting. He's always found it horrible. Now he's saying it's just a, you know, an old fashioned, antiquated form and should be illegal. So they've got their champion there.
Yeah. My vote for the most distasteful comments so far, there's still time, go to Leon Cooperman, however, that I think he took the cake.
Here, here.
Anyway, next up, we've touched on it already, but the fallout from this, in terms of specifics, what do you guys expect? Kim, let's start with you again.
Well, I think we're going to have to see, really, from a regulatory standpoint, what happens when these stocks do crash back to earth. It's going to happen at some point. I mean, there's going to be a decline, and see just, you know, how it affected the retail trader, how many got in late and how many are, you know, are going to be wiped out by this. And I think that will, you know, kind of push Washington's agenda a little bit more. Counterintuitively, I can see a bit of a democratization more of trading, in as much as I'm having people wondering, why can't I have a hedge fund app that I can just get into and it's run by somebody, and if it blows up, it blows up and I lose all my money. I understand the risk, but I want to be in the hedge fund business too.
All right, Steven.
You know, I don't know what the fall is going to be. There's going to be hearings. There's going to be subpoenas. There's going to be a lot of talk. But eventually, those kind of in power in financial markets, at least, are going to come out just fine. I mean, Citadel, Goldman, you know, 0.72. They're well seated within the Biden administration. That's not a knock on the Biden administration. They're well seated within any administration.
Yeah.
You know, nothing bad's going to happen to them. Right. People are going to lose a lot of money when these stocks come crashing down, but there's really no substitute for price discovery. I don't like the halting of trading anytime. Mm-hmm. I don't like the banning of short selling anytime. Price discovery works, free expression works. And, you know, a year from now, we'll move on to, you know, the next kind of big deal. Mm-hmm.
Brad, what about you?
So I think we're seeing some of the fallout take place just this morning. We're seeing the de facto silencing of the process of publicizing short calls. Mm-hmm. So there's already been this pseudo silencing of free speech. Now, that's not to say that the stagecraft, to use a term that a colleague used once, of this short sale presentation. You know, the idea that if you are going to go short a company, you make a large production out of it, you present at a major conference, you go on TV and you short it potentially right before that, so the masses come in after you. Maybe that stagecraft is going to go away. And so I don't know if that's a good or bad thing. It's not my place to put that, but I think that's part of the fallout. You saw Citron's left just come out today, say he's no longer going to be publishing his short calls. And it's put fear in the hearts of men who are short selling. I saw one of the more famous short sellers, Safget Capital. It's run by, her name escapes me, but she called Valiant fraud a long time ago. She's been a very vocal proponent behind how a lot of these short sellers uncover wrongdoing. And, you know, Wirecard was the example she used yesterday. I feel like that you're gonna scare a lot of people, and you're gonna prevent a lot of these people from getting a short thesis out to be fully vetted by the market. You know, in many cases, the stagecraft works temporarily. A stock might fall 5-6% on the day of the publication, and then the market looks at it and they say, "I don't agree." Mm-hmm. But then sometimes it kind of seeps in, and people realize, "Wait a minute, maybe there's something awry here." Muddy Waters is kind of the gold standard in terms of their ability to suss this out. And if you have masses of people kind of getting behind this and overrunning anyone who stands in the way, I can see it getting a little bit scary. And I don't want to knock the retail traders who've supported this process, if it is retail traders. One important caveat, in that chairman's interview from Interactive Brokers yesterday, he said that we were going to have to look at some of these trades. It's very unlikely that it was entirely retail driven. There's a lot of money that had to go into doing this, and no one knows who's really behind a lot of these moves. And so that's something that needs to be looked into. And when we will talk about the little guy rising up against the big guy, a lot of these funds, a lot of these stocks that were targeted have huge ownership interests by the very long short hedge funds that, you know, maybe quote unquote hurt by any of these processes.
Yeah, that gets a bit of the fallacy of this narrative that we've seen, which, as I mentioned at the outset, I mean, there absolutely were hedge funds that were and are long GameStop and all of the other, you know, the other stocks that have been pumped here by the Wall Street Bets crowd. So this is not an even divide, right? It's not like Star Wars, you know, dark side versus, and even there's overlap, right? I mean, if you know your Star Wars a little bit. It all comes back to Star Wars for me. okay, but Brad, I think that gets to one of my concerns too for the short sellers, and I've covered these guys pretty closely over the years, and they say what you want, but over history they have at times uncovered some pretty big frauds. The biggest, right, maybe the biggest, is Enron, right? Chainos famously.
Yep.
And so they serve a purpose and they provide a value to the market, to transparency, and to uncovering fraud, right?
And to his credit, and you know, he's not one of these stagecraft individuals. So, right, you know, he's kind of one of these silent people behind the scenes, and he'll throw shade at a couple names over time. But, you know, he's one of these true individuals who's smart about it and picks his places.
So. Yeah, but even the ones that are activist shorts, like apparently they do this because they have high conviction that right. are frauds. Anyway, that they are, I would expect, will go underground at least for a little while, and that gets us to the fallout. Stephen, what's your take on the winners and losers?
You know, the winners, the fella, I don't know the guy's, the handle on Reddit, but his last name is Gil. It's now starting to come public that he was kind of the impetus.
Roaring Kitten, right?
What was it called?
Roaring Kitten.
Roaring Kitten. Yeah. And I think the Wall Street Journal has an excellent interview with him today. He's trying to get out ahead of it. They're trying to make him out to be a bad guy when he first got kind of doxxed. And he just seems like he did some really smart analysis. And Is he going on CNBC and wearing a suit and tie and speaking eloquently like Bill Ackman? No, but you know he wears weird outfits and he talks in his own vernacular. But he did some great analysis. He saw the guy Chewy getting into it. He thought there was a lot of potential in GameStop, and then he combined that with these massive short positions. He's like, hey, there's a real chance to make some serious money in this, and you know, good for him and good for the people who are listening to him.
Fair enough. All right, Kim, what about your, who do you think is going to be one of the winners or losers?
Winners, I've got social media CEOs who will no longer have to be the face of greed for a little while, because it's going to be hedge fund guys up at the hearings on Capitol Hill. So they'll be taking a lot of the heat for that. But also, I think winners, people who like to watch movies in theaters too, because unless AMC is crazy, they're going to be funding themselves through the rest of the pandemic and staying afloat.
Yeah, good point. Good point. We haven't talked about AMC. Yeah. Brad, what about you?
Per the movie point, I will say the winners and losers are probably going to be Adam McKay and Michael Lewis, who famously put together The Big Short. You have to imagine that there's going to be a movie called The Big Long, or I think there are countless other ideas for what this redux should be. You know, I kind of reached out to them. Hopefully they would respond. But we do need the same cast. You know, Michael Burry, interestingly, was involved. He was a major character in The Big Short, having called the mortgage crisis. He actually was a major player in GME and GameStop well before this ever got started. So there's a certain serendipity to how this all began, and the same players are involved once more, although in a very different capacity. So I feel like they're definitely going to be winners. And as far as, you know, just to kind of play back to our normal format on this show, Twitter was up 9-10% this week. And I think we saw the, you know, like we were just saying earlier, the CEOs are no longer the bad guys, some of these firms, and the democratization of speech and how people have just kind of gravitated to these platforms. It's going to be helpful for them, but movies.
Mm-hmm. All right. I guess that covers it for this week. If you're listening to the podcast and want to watch the video airs around 4 p.m. every Friday afternoon at seekingalpha.com/videos. We thank you all for watching and listening, and look forward to speaking to you all again next week.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to seekingalpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.